So this session, we're going through Build v Next, or at least Build Current now. And I did have in the title VSO, but as of yesterday morning, it's now called Visual Studio Team Services. I promise only to mess up and say VSO 5 times through the entire talk. And TFS 2015. The good news is with a lot of what I'm going to be showing, it's going to be in VSTS. But because TFS on-prem is effectively the service just with some lag, everything I'm showing is going to be in on-premise versions. The TFS 2015 update 1 will have most of the stuff. I'll talk through some of the differences in terms of what's on the service and what's on premises just towards the end, but generally it's fairly much on parity. So, first question, why a new build system? So, the team, when they were putting this together, used to receive these kind of questions. You may have asked these yourselves. Who looks after builds, by the way, normally? Yep. And who gets to tweak the builds and make messes, all that sort of stuff, and chase down when it's wrong and broken and things like that? And who uses TeamCity? Thank you for your honesty. Use TeamCity because of questions like this, right? Where you go, well, how do I run a script after I build the solution? How can I integrate with some product and whatever else? Can I build Android or iOS? Who does cross-platform stuff? Sweet, a few of you. Are you doing mobile or Java or something else? Xamarin, cool. And obviously doing Xamarin with the old build system was challenging. Why do I need the current version of Visual Studio just to edit a build definition? Questions people would ask, and you know, the answers were because Windows workflow. How do I get to the raw build log? So you've done a build, the build's broken, you want to go and check the log file, so what do? You open up a remote desktop session onto the build machine, you try and find the folder in the build machine where the build happened, then you open up the log file in there and you forget to close the window. You disconnect your session, you run the next build, and the build breaks straight away because you managed to lock the folder. Anyone done that? Yes. So I thought it was just me. How do you put test coverage in there? How do you keep your agents up to date? Why do all the binaries get dumped into a single folder? Does anyone know? Just because? And the best one? Has anyone opened a XAML build definition? What was your first reaction when you did that?
Oh my God.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, XAML build definitions. If you've ever opened up all of them, just expand everything. It's massive. And you end up scrolling, you're just like, but aren't I just running steps? So these are all the challenges with the existing XAML build definitions and the system there. The reason the team did that actually made sense at the time. They were trying to take a build system and produce something that would work in a farm. So most build at the time was basically a single build server. You'd push something to that job, a job to the machine, it would do its thing. But then you wanted to do a highly scalable build system. Their solution was to come up with that Windows workflow XAML-based approach. So they could basically farm sections of it off to other machines, and you'd have the build controller and the agents and, pardon me, and so forth. So as of now, Team Build is dead. Long live Team Build. Or the king is dead, long live the king. And no, XAML builds are not dead. It's kind of an attempt at humor. It's probably a bit early in the morning for that for you guys. That's okay. But XAML Build has abdicated, given the crown over to the new Team Build, or Build v Next. Thank goodness for that. If you are in love with XAML Build and you enjoy your XAML builds and you want to keep using your XAML builds, you can, no problem whatsoever. Go nuts, enjoy yourself in the privacy of your own home. Just over there in the corner. To all intents and purposes, it's a retired product now. Recommendation is to start thinking about moving things across, especially once parity is reached. There's still a few things that XAML Build does that the new build system doesn't quite do yet, but it's very close. New build system is very much like that Team City. Other build system that you might have heard of and used. Simply a task runner. You start a build up, you run your tasks, away you go. Now, who's played with the system now? Only a few of you, or the rest of you just too tired to lift a hand, or you're in the session because nothing else looked interesting? Thank you. And you'll see these tasks in here are not just Visual Studio tasks. So it's not just run Visual Studio things or C-sharp, .NET based things or C++ stuff. What we have up here, we've got Android builds, we've got CMake, we've got Maven, we've got Jake, we've got Gradle, we've got Bash scripts, Linux based stuff. Whatever you like, it's a cross-platform build system. The intent with the team when they were putting this together was they had a few simple design rules. Number one, make it cross-platform. Number two, don't come up with a new build scripting language. They didn't want to create another DSL, another MS Build, or anything like that. And number three, make it highly extensible. Success. The interesting thing, all these things here, all these tasks, are all open source. We're actually going to look at one of them a bit later on. And writing your own tasks, we're going to have a look at how that's done. It's actually fairly easy. The process of uploading them to the service, all those sort of things. All right, so the basic demos. Let's have a look at a few builds. Now, you've all seen the basic builds, I'm sure, where you just simply whack some tasks in and everyone's happy. There we go. Let's just zoom that up. So you've probably seen this. I go and I create a new build definition. I select a template or I start with empty. I've actually created a custom build here as well, which is literally just take an existing build definition and save it as a template, which means if you want to use it again for other builds in other projects, you can. But I'm just going to do the basic one here. This is a Visual Studio one, and I'll go next. What type of repository? Who's got Subversion repository still around the place? So Subversion support's going to be there, which is great. So now you not only can build Git and TFVC-based projects, you can also build Subversion projects. Lots of Subversion code still out there in the marketplace. So having a system that does that's actually a good thing. Anyone using CVS, Visual Source Safe, file systems? Can't help you there. So it's here, I'm going to use the hosted build server, and I go, happy days, and then we get some tasks and everything's exciting. Instead of looking at that and stepping through some of this, I thought I'd jump over here and just show you a CI build that I've got running. Slightly different. This one's got a NuGet restore happening first, and then it builds the solutions. You can see here, hopefully you can see here, that I'm building all the solutions in here. This particular Git project is the microservices code base that I was using yesterday's session for those who were in that. So there's four different solutions in here, which is kind of cool, and I'm just building all of them as part of this build process. We jump into the build, we do whatever we need to do, run the tests, index, and publish. Fairly straightforward. I've actually got this set to build multiple configurations. So I'm building a debug and a release build at the same time. In fact, you know what? Let's actually just kick one off and we'll come back and look at that. So you can see here I've got debug and release. All right, that's going to do its thing. The build log is going to start up. It will trace things through. And you can see on the left here I've got the debug one and the build release all queued up, ready to go, running on the hosted controller. If I jump back here while that build's running and go back into edit mode, I'll just run through some of the items in here. So they're my options. The multiply here is saying which variables do I want to look at for comma separation, and then I queue a build based on expanding those, basically. And if I look at my variables, you can see here I have debug and release by default. Okay, so that's how you do these multiple solution builds. Fairly straightforward. By the way, all these variables are up to you to set up. You can create these. There's a bunch that are predefined, so build number, that sort of thing. What agent I'm on, agent information. If you click the link here, you get a list of, you go to the documentation page, it shows you what all the different variables are. There's quite a few. Let's just click it anyway because I can. Go network. Working with variables, predefined, so system, team project, URI, collection IDs, definition name, all that sort of stuff that you would be used to expecting from your XAML build, they're available here as variables. And to reference them, you simply do dollar brackets, parentheses, sorry, and then the variable name, and away you go. All right, so repository over here is Git. I can access other things, such as GitHub and other Git repositories that might be external. Maybe you've got something on Codeplex, for instance. Anyone still got code on Codeplex? Google code? Bizarre. Triggers, again, as you would expect, a CI trigger. Batching changes works pretty much as you would expect. So you know how you can, in XAML builds, you run a build and if you've got other check-ins while the build's happening, it just batches them up and then runs them as a single job. That's what that is. One difference between this and a XAML build has the option to run no more than every 15 minutes, if you recall. We don't have that in this particular system, not yet. So that is one point of difference. It's fairly minor though, I think. Does anyone use that option? Yeah. Schedule builds, again, fairly straightforward. I can add schedules, but I can have now multiple schedules, which is nice, which is actually an improvement. So that's a good thing. So this is kind of the idea of running your nightly builds, or you might want to run a couple of builds during the day, during working days, and then one on weekends that does something extra. And away we go. The other thing to pay attention to in your triggers here, let me just turn that off. I can actually build multiple branches off here. I can actually put wildcards in here as well. So if I end up doing things like topic branches and I check those in and I want to make sure those builds are okay before I do pull requests or merges and so forth, I can check them in here and make sure that's okay and just configure this build so that regardless of what branch I'm checking in on, inside Git anyway, we're going to run this same build process all the time. So I don't have to have what we do in XAML build and TFPC where we end up with, you know, the workspace mapping, we end up with the same build defined 15 times for each branch, and every time you create a branch you have to go and clone a build definition and so forth. We don't have to deal with that particular problem. So that's a nice feature, that's good. Other things across the top that are worth paying attention to, badge enablement. I'll show this to you in a second. The idea here is that when the badge is enabled, you get a URL for a little image, and then you can embed that in, say, your own wiki internally or on a website or something like that. So I've got a GitHub-enabled build where I'm taking the badge and showing it in the README Markdown file on the GitHub project. And I'll show you that in a second. Which is nice. And then retention. Retention's a little bit different now. So you recall retention was, with XAML builds, is based on the number of builds. So keep the last 10 builds based on either success or failure or stopped or whatever else. Here it's now a case of time. How many days do I keep? So I understand that's slightly different in terms of the retention policy. Who uses retention policies, by the way? Yeah, how do you normally configure them?
Normally on number of builds.
So you might want to just have a look at how many builds you've got, how often they happen, because you might want to shorten the time down. I assume that's because of disk space concerns, things like that.
Yep.
Yeah, because disk is so expensive. Yeah. And when we clean it up, we can clean up our test results and all those sort of things. So we can still do cleanup as we could do before, but just the approach is slightly different. Now, this is nice. This is nice. Your build definitions are now versioned. Yes. Yes. So you know the problem with XAML build. You do the build change. Someone screws around with the build definition. Who did it? Not me. No one knows. someone mysterious came in during the night, changed the build definition, and broke it for everyone else, but they don't work here. The build fairy, yeah. Because all of the build definitions are stored and are versionable, so I can actually look at this and click these two and say, what's the difference? And I can get a diff between my build definitions. Woo-hoo. So nice. And of course, we JSON all the things. And so I can see that I had some stuff that was enabled and now is enabled. And I had, this is the multiply. So this is where I was setting up the extra configuration runs. So the debug and the release. So switching that around. And I can see that in here, in context, see what else was added, change of the triggers, whatever else. So all of that's versionable, and I can see, as I go back here and just click the history again, I can also see who changed it, so I know who to point the finger at and educate on how to do things properly. Yeah. So that's nice. That's really nice. Answers one of those long-running questions and complaints people have had with the old build system. All right, so that's your basics. That build, by the way, should have finished by now, hopefully. It should be, yeah, well and truly done because I've talked too much. If I jump in here, I now have, let me just get that out of the way so we can see this a little bit better. All right, so I can see this build ran for 6.8 minutes. The reason why the previous build took a long time last night is while the two builds were running, I slotted another build in between. So each of those release and debug builds runs as a separate job and gets queued up separately. It doesn't run as a whole batch. So if I've got five definitions, other people can slot builds in with the agent in between and it will queue up and move in between. So we've got this new layout, new view of the page, and as of two days ago, started Connect, we've actually got a new test result view as well. So previously we just had the test results showing, you know, four tests out of four succeeded and the run duration, but now we're getting some visualization in here. When you customize things, you can quite easily insert your own outputs into here. So if you have your own build task and you want to throw some outputs into the log here, you can do that. It's not a problem. So what have we got here? So we've got the build, we've got our issues. We can see I've got the debug build issues, the release build issues, associated changes, if I had any that were appropriate. I can look at the timeline and see what's been happening, how long each step took, all that sort of thing. I can jump into one of these if I want to see it. Sorry, and go into the logs, I should do. I might do that, actually. I've got my artifacts. So once we've finished the build, we uploaded a drop to VSTS. Hit explore, and you'll see here's my drop, which is just a zip file. And here are all my solutions and the outputs and projects and everything else. So this is not the one big blob of binaries and DLLs and everything in one folder now. It's a structured output exactly as you would expect it from a Visual Studio build locally, for example. A Java build, you'll have a WAR file there, or a WAR file, depending on how you want to say it. Is there a right way to say it? Yeah, exactly. I jump in here and I've got my bin and release folders so you can see. That's all good. Happy days, right? Nice, easy way to grab things. And then I can then take that, send that package off to deployment as I wish. The new test hub here is new. And this is showing me, again, that summary of my test information. If I've got a bunch of broken tests, we now get some nice visualization and charts showing if I've got some failed tests. In this case, I was awesome and all four of my tests passed. I've obviously got massive coverage as well. Four tests in my code base, they must be good. And away we go. I can download all the logs as a zip. If you've not done this before, this is extraordinarily exciting. And let me just do the old Windows Zoom for you guys so you can actually see it. There's my logs, and I can jump into one of these, and I can see what's been happening at each step. So if I wanted to get to the text logs and I didn't have the output showing on screen, I've got an easy way to get it that doesn't involve me trying to log into the build server, find the folder the build's happened in, and then grab the logs and so forth. And these are just straight up text. So if I hit one of these, you can see there's XUnit doing its thing, running some tests. It's all very exciting, which is great when you're trying to diagnose a problem because Richard accessed your code and screwed it all up. Okay, so that's the basics. What about Java, for example, just for fun? So I grabbed some code off GitHub because that's what you do when you're doing demos. And I put together a simple Java build. And this one here simply runs Maven with POM and then publishes the artifacts. And if I queue this guy up, queue a new build. Oh, I should talk about one thing, by the way. When you queue a build based on the tasks you've got, the tasks will make demands of an agent. So tasks say, well, for this task to run, I need Java on the system, or I need Visual Studio, or I need some form of JavaScript, or whatever it happens to be based on the type of tasks you've got. Those demands are exposed and shown here in the list. Or I can add some demands in this case. But the agent has to support what the native demands are for the build. And if I try and run this on a machine that doesn't support those demands, I'll get a warning that says, you're missing these things. If you want to try running it, you can, but it's probably going to break. And then you've got that check so that you can be sure that you're only running jobs that will succeed on appropriate build agents. In this case, POM XML, there's no coverage. I'm not using Curvature or anything like that. And then I'm doing a publish, and the publish is very straightforward. I'm just taking the task list WAR file and dropping it into the build, so that's all cool. Did I queue a build? No, I didn't. I left it on the dialog and walked away because attention span. So you can see, hopefully, let's go, come on. Connecting to the hosted agent, it's going to run, do its thing. And here's one I prepared earlier. It's like a cooking show, isn't it? And here's the drop in this particular case, and you can see, as I mentioned before, I've just got a WAR file there, and I could then grab that, run it with Java locally on my machine, or deploy it to wherever it is I was interested in deploying it to. This is still running on the hosted build agent on VSTS. Let me go back to here and just see if it's queued. It's in progress. Where are we up to? Waiting for console output. There we go. So it's downloading a whole bunch of things from various places. It's very exciting watching a download happen, isn't it? But we're good to go. And it's doing its stuff. And file encoding set, CP1252, compiling the sources. Almost there. Let's go. Come on. Shall we wait for it? Yeah. Hopefully you've got the idea. The other build I wanted to show you, it's publishing the artifacts. Okay, there we go. The other thing I wanted to show you very quickly, who does open source work, private projects, anything like that? Couple of people. One of the things we mentioned before is that the build system is flexible and can talk to other source code providers. You don't have to have all your source inside VSTS. You could just go and grab stuff from GitHub, for example, or an external provider. So in my builds, I have a GitHub build, which is currently broken. That's okay. It's on purpose. And this GitHub build is actually this code here. So let me just zoom that up for you a little bit. And you can see down here, I have this build status. I mentioned before that we can have a build badge in our options. The build badge creates a little image file, which is that, and it shows me what's going on. In fact, that image file also shows up inside VSTS in various parts of the UI to give you an indication of how healthy the code is. So if you go to the code view, it will normally show you what's going on. So if I go over to here in code, for example, I should see build succeeded over here. So this is a nice way in the UI of seeing what's going on with the build system and are things healthy and putting something visually in front of your devs so that they can go, oh, I really shouldn't be working on the code at the moment because things are stuffed. I probably should fix the build first and then come back and continue because devs pay attention to that all the time, right? Yeah, it's too early in the morning for people to be that honest. Okay, so the way things work with getting builds from external systems is we have to have a connector. So this build definition, I'll just bring that across. I'm currently doing just the basic. These are the default four steps when you do a new Visual Studio build. And it's all set up as the basics. But the key here is if I go to repository, I have a repository type of GitHub. And then I have to have a connection. Now, the connections come from the admin part of the system. So if I go to manage, it jumps me over to the admin side. And I end up with these external endpoints. And you can see I've got two endpoints. I've got one for GitHub and one for SonarQube. I'm going to show a little bit later on how we integrate with that. The GitHub one here is effectively, I've loaded up a personal access token. So I go onto GitHub, I go into my account, I create a personal access token with these scopes. The reason it needs the ability to create a hook in your repository on GitHub is for the continuous integration build. So that as you do a check-in, we have a commit hook that then talks over to VSTS and fires off the build. That's all it's for. And then I put in my personal access token and I edit it and away I go. Once that's there, I've then got the ability, VSTS has got the ability to do an OAuth connection to GitHub and can go from there. So back over here in the build definition, apart from that, the rest of it's exactly the same. It's just the normal build. So we've got the particular project I'm looking at. You can see I've got quite a few that I could access from GitHub. I'm just using the MicroCafe one. I've got my branch. I'm not going to clean things out. Check out submodules if I get submodules. The options over here, the general tab is where I've got that badge enabled. And the URL is here, and I just copied that and pasted it into my Markdown file. That's how I got that image showing. And you can see the demands here. In this case, it needs MS Build, Visual Studio, and VS Test. They're the default demands that this build currently requires based on the steps that are in it. So what do I need to do to make this build work? Let's have a look at what's broken first. So I jump into here, and I can see that it's missing Newtonsoft, and it's missing other things, and I've got all sorts of problems. Basically, if I looked at the log, I'd see that I haven't restored my NuGet packages. Fairly straightforward, common mistake. So what am I going to do? Yes, I'm going to add a build step. So let's say I'm there and I go add build step. I need to go to my package and I NuGet installer, add that. Cool. And then that's pretty much it. I'm just going to go find all the solutions, do the NuGet package restore for each of those solutions. If I wanted to, I could play around with other options. Path to NuGet.exe is useful for your own build server, so I'm just using the hosted one at the moment. If I was doing this on my own build server, I might have NuGet in a different location, so I might need to point out where that is.
Is there MyGet?
MyGet is just a NuGet repository. So whether it's MyGet, ProGet, or the new package option, so this is one of the extensions that's also available, by the way. You can now do packages inside VSTS. So if you go into your extensions, the new extensions library, same as the code search, that's also a new extension. Feel free to play with these. I can create a feed, and I can publish NuGet packages to that feed and use that as a NuGet source, or a MyGet, or a ProGet, or a whatever else. Question? It's still probably a little bit early at the moment. Things like that MyGet has and ProGet have that this doesn't quite have are things like the proxying of packages, controlling things based on licenses so that I only expose NuGet packages with the appropriate licenses for use internally or just approved packages. So there's a bunch of admin and permissions that those things have that isn't here yet. I'll just say yet. I expect those will turn up at some point in time. And you can always go to user voice and ask for these things as well. That said, I'd still have a play with this. It's definitely worth having some investigation. And my expectation is this will end up getting charged for at some point anyway. So just looking at what's happening with VSTS in particular, is it's looking more and more like you have a base pricing level and then some add-ons. So for example, test management is an add-on cost at the moment. I'd say that model will apply to more and more things. And if you look at some of the extensions as well, some of them are actually charged extensions right at the moment. I went off track. What was I doing? This. Oh, that's right. And I probably want to make sure that's the first thing I do in my build step, so I simply just drag it into position and save it. Cool. So there's my build. I save that. Cue the build. Away we go. And then, of course, we kick over into our log files, and we wait for that to do its thing. And you should see that in here it's going to go to the agent. It's going to start grabbing the code. Any second now. Watch while I stare at the screen. Oh, starting the build. And you should see somewhere, getting the sources. So we've jumped onto the repo, we've grabbed out a particular SHA, the particular commit. It's gone into a folder on the system. Away we go. So that's kind of three different ways of building things inside the new build system, and there's a whole lot more. I've only scratched the surface in the number of tasks that we've got. All right, some architectural changes, and then we'll do some more demos. So a few things to be aware of. It coexists with XAML builds, as I mentioned before, which is good. So you don't have to throw your existing stuff out. So if you've got a heavy investment in XAML builds, they will continue to work. No changes, no dramas. Out of curiosity, who's running TFS on-premise? Okay, and who's using VSO, VSTS? Okay, and the rest of you, just here because there were no other sessions and you thought you'd come along. Enjoy sleeping in the back of the room. With XAML builds, we needed controllers, right? And a build controller connected to a particular collection, and it was tied to the collection, all that sort of thing. So architecturally, you had this situation that once you created a build server, it was owned by a collection. That doesn't exist anymore. A build server is now effectively just an agent, and as long as it's part of the service or the server, you can use it in any collection. And we have these agent queues and agent pools. So that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. I'd like to take credit for it, but I didn't do it. but yeah, that's a fantastic change. So we don't have controllers per se anymore. Yay. Agents themselves are xcopy deployed. So what that means is you do an agent setup first time on the machine. You have to do it one time. You download the agent software, you do the setup, but once you've done it, that's it. If you then need any updates, TFS or VSTS will push that out to your agents automatically. It also pushes out task definition. So if you update the task definition on the server, you don't have to then go, well, do I have to update 422 build servers? Who's got a farm, by the way? Build server farm, anyone? Yeah, how many machines are in your farm? Four, okay. Six? Yeah, anyone got more than 20? No. These guys use this themselves. They dog food this stuff. They've got a large number, is the nicest way of putting it. A large number of servers, over 100 build servers, all running and generally busy the entire day. Automating deployment updates for those or task updates and trying to push them out, a nightmare. So now all that happens is as the agents connect and start a new job, they check if they've got the latest of everything, they'll pull down whatever they need, and we go from there. Conceptually, it's probably not the best diagram in the world, but let's say I've got XAML builds and I've got a controller and all that sort of stuff in this team project collection. I've got another project collection which is just using pools and the new team build system. So we've got these two pools that are available at the TFS deployment level, regardless of the collection, so at the top level of the server. They're available to be used by various collections. Okay, I might still be doing XAML builds in collection one, which is cool, in which case collection one owns machine one. Fair enough. But machine two and three are running, as you can see, different agents for different pools. No problem at all. And we've got great flexibility between them. And the communication is all just over HTTP, so it's firewall friendly. Very handy when I'm trying to run agents here talking to, say, VSTS, because I can do that. I can run my own build servers locally talking to VSTS in the famous cloud, or I could be running TFS and running cross domains and all that sort of thing as well if I wished. From a security and isolation perspective, each build's now in its own process, which is good, so that if a build crashes and locks files, you don't then have to jump onto the server, find the process and kill it. Has anyone run into that problem where you have a long-running build that gets killed or something doesn't finish properly, you end up with file locks happening and it's just like, oh, the paper cuts. It's now completely isolated. So if it crashes, it cleans up after itself, which is, a good thing, a nice architectural improvement. From a security perspective, because we're over HTTP, we need to secure the connection. So we're doing that with an access token. But the access token is short-lived. So you can't steal the token and then keep playing with it afterwards from a security perspective. Also, because of the security improvements, we now have builds that run in a scoped permission set, which can either be at the collection level or at the project level. I didn't actually show you that. I'll show you that in a second. What I would recommend in general is secure your builds at the project level. Don't let them have access to anything beyond that unless you need to. You might have something that you want to access at the collection level because you're doing cross projects, something or others. That's okay, it's up to you. But just be aware that you've got these two levels now. And within that, with the agents and the pools, there's now security around that as well and permissions around that in terms of who can do what with an agent pool or an agent queue and who's allowed to queue builds or administer builds and so forth. So you've got more control there as well, effectively meaning that you can give a team an agent queue, or a build queue, I should say, which multiple agents could be connected to, and that team can control that themselves and play around with it as much as they want. And other teams can have their own agents and queues over here in their project and administer them completely separately, which is nice if you've got a scaled out deployment. And again, it also means that I can't write a unit test that, for instance, uses the TFS API to do some naughty things that I shouldn't do. Not that that ever happens. All right, so let's jump in and have a quick look at the agents. How are we going for time? We're going great. We're going great, Richard. Talk to myself. All right, let's jump into admin. Okay, and up to the default collection level. And into the build. All right, so we've got some default policies here. You can play around with those if you wish. There's really not too much in there. You noticed before, I think, one of the retention policies was locked. It had a little padlock next to it. The 30-day retention policy, we had a padlock. That's part of this maximum retention policy. You can't keep more than whatever. It's defined at the collection level. But agent queues are the more interesting part. And I've got here the hosted agent by default. On VSTS, you get licensed one hosted agent, one on-premise or private agent. From a pricing model, if you're using VSTS, and you want more than one of your own agents, you pay an agent fee, which is whatever it happens to be. It's not much. And it's much better than the build minute approach that used to be charged. All right, so when I look at an agent here, what I can see is everything that's been happening on the agent, which is cool. So I can see that I've had my GitHub build, my Java build, my CI build. All these things have been happening on the agent, and I've got various success things. So it's not now just looking at one team project, what's been happening on that build agent, it's across everything. So if you're a build admin and you're looking after a pool of build agents, this is a great way to see what's been happening and which teams you're going to upset when you turn this agent off. And from here, I can navigate in, I can see whatever's going on. That's cool. I mentioned roles before. This is where we're defining the roles now for this particular agent, this queue, I should say. Queue admins, queue users, and I've got some control around that, which is nice. The on-premise one I have, if I was setting up a new one, I would click Download Agent. Download Agent simply pulls down a zip file, and I unzip that locally on the machine, and then run some simple commands. So I'm just going to do that. I have a remote desktop session, or I had a remote desktop session until I rebooted before. All right. Okay, can you all see that? Font's okay? cool. Let me clear the screen. All right. So when I download it, I end up with effectively just the agent folder and a configure agent command. If I run configure agent, it's going to ask me a few things. I probably have to go through this now because I just hit the button, but that's okay. Do I want to replace the server registration? No, I'll just keep it there. The name is whatever it is, agent RB build. The URL is the same, and the default agent's the same, and whatever else. Note that last one, this is where I can configure it to run as a service. It's probably what you want to do instead of running it interactively like I'm doing at the moment. Then I get prompted for my credentials. And PA, oops, what the, don't say the wrong password while you're typing the other one in. It's just like, what was I typing? PAT SSW0RD, right? Exclamation. All right. And then that starts the server. Now, what's cool about this is if I go over here to default, come on, all queues, default, oh, agents, look at that. Okay, the agent's running, correct? It's got the little green thing. Watch how fast this is. If I hit Control C, all right, terminate job, yes. You see it go red? That's nice. If I start it up again, VSO agent.exe, watch how quick it goes back to green and available. Authenticating and boom. That's nice. Really quick live updates in the UI. I'm not having to refresh things. Again, so if I'm a build admin, I'm keeping track of what's happening on my build servers. I can see genuine live updates of where they're at, which is, I think, personally, I geek out on that stuff. I think it's cool. All right, so I have my agent here. My agent reports capabilities. By default, it's going to pick these capabilities up out of a bunch of environment variables and scanning the system and things like that to have a look at what's around. So I can see the agent version is 1.901. That will update if the agent updates. Where's the command? Where's all the MS build files and module paths and Visual Studio IDE and so on and so forth? This agent's not configured for Java build. Okay. This one, the hosted build agent, it has a whole lot more. It has curl in here and Android SDKs and Node.js and all sorts of other different capabilities that it's reporting. Okay. So these are all things that are available for you guys to have a look at and use and tag in your build definitions. All right. Now, if I go back to here, I mentioned before, different builds. Let's go back to the Explorer. And I mentioned I've got SonarQube running. SonarQube is a code analysis system to help me keep track of technical debt. Common part of things that we want to do in our build system is check that the code's okay before passing the build. We're going to do a build that runs through and looks at some of those numbers. But the way this works, the SonarQube build runner needs Java on the server. So if I try and queue this build, I'm going to say this is the case, but I'm going to change it from the hosted queue to the default queue. And when I click OK, it says up the top here, really hard to read in that tiny little font, no agent could be found with the following capabilities, MS build, Java, etc., etc. It's picking up those capabilities from the step definitions and saying, I don't have an agent that can do this. Do you want to run the build anyway? Because it's not going to work. And then I'm going to say, you know what? No, I probably don't. And I'll cancel that. So that's nice. That's part of the demand system that exists within the new build servers. All right. Questions? Okay so far? All right. In that case, extensibility. So, who wants to write their own build tasks? What's wrong with you people? Don't do that. Well, actually you can, it's not too bad. The guidance from the team is that in general, because it's so easy to put a script into the build system. You can run PowerShell script, bash script, command prompts, all those sort of things. In general, you probably don't need to do a task. So your first step should be just run a script first if I can, and then think about it. The reason we want to use tasks is if there's a complex bit of setup, for example, or there's a lot of processing that you need to do, then maybe it's worth doing it, or if it's something that you will repeat across different build definitions. So instead of running the same script and repeating yourself all over the place, create a task for it and then have that available for everyone. So that's kind of the guidance. Look to do a script first, and then if you've got extra complexity and extra need, then look at doing custom build tasks. Now, the way these work is fairly straightforward. Really straightforward, in fact. You write a bit of JSON, you write a PowerShell script, or if you're doing cross-platform, a Node script. So the cross-platform build agent is written in Node.js, which is great, and just runs Node tasks, so you can just run those on the server. And then that will download to the agent and go from there, which is cool. So let's have a quick look again. And the way we're going to do this is really easy. I'm going to show you firstly the internals of a particular script. So this here, VSO agent tasks. I mentioned before the tasks are open source. Yep. So this here is the task for doing an NPM job. So NPM is a Node Package Manager. If I wanted to download Node packages onto my build server so that I could do whatever I want to, I can. And we've got in here a few things. The first is JSON file. This is our manifest, effectively, for what we have in this in the code. So if I just go to the raw view and then zoom it up so it's easier to read, it's a fairly structured, fairly easy to follow JSON file. I can see here's my description. Here's where I'd get some more markdown. So in the markdown is shown in the build. What version I'm running on, it demands this. So the demand here is on the agent, I need to have NPM installed. This is where those demands come in that I mentioned before. I need to be running a certain agent version, fair enough. And the groups is for display on the screen, inputs, variables. It's fairly straightforward. Help task, help text. you might have noticed next to each of the properties in the build properties, there's a little I. If I hover over that, it's showing a little bit of markdown. That's the markdown that it shows. Arguments, I've got some string arguments, change working directory, whatever else. And then when it executes, it's basically running Node. And this one, on Node, it's going to run npm.js. And on PowerShell, it's going to run npm.ps1. That's how I define what's going to happen, whether I'm on a Linux or a Mac box, or I'm on a Windows machine. Okay. Looking at the PowerShell task, I take my parameters, the command arguments and current working directory, which is from the fields that I set up in the JSON file. And then I simply come through and import modules, whatever else, get command, name npm, execute it, do whatever else, invoke tool, there it is at the bottom, npm path with the arguments in that folder. And away we go. Fairly straightforward. Or I might want to have a look at the JavaScript version, the one that runs on Linux. And it says, I require this. I have VSO TaskLib, which is a JavaScript library for the tasks to run with. So you've got some helper JavaScript files for Node. Grab the input, do what I need to, and then call npm.exec. And here this is working with a promise. So it execs, and if it succeeds, then we exit. If it fails, we throw a debug message and then exit. Seems straightforward? Okay. So that task already exists on the server. What if I want to upload a custom task? Let's pretend I want to get Octopus deploy working. For example, who uses Octopus? Cool. Who automates their deployments, by the way? Not many. Okay. How do you normally deploy then? Right click from Visual Studio. Don't do that. Manual deployment by the ops team. You create the run list, wait for it to fail because they misread something, and get the call later on, and you try and figure out what step they screwed up. Yeah, okay. I feel your pain. All right, octopus. The easiest way I'm going to do this is there's an octopus Git project. I'm just going to clone this library. So go to the command line. There's a thing called TFX. TFX is the cross-platform TFS command line, which looks something like that. This will run on anything. This is actually, again, Node in operation. So this is an NPM library that you download and install. And so I've installed that. I'm just going to go git clone clong. There you go. OctoTFS, which is the task from Octopus Deploy on GitHub. So I'll pull that down, and we will see. In here, that I've got source, PowerShell scripts, build, custom. Oh gosh, source, custom, create octopus, whatever else, octoxe, task.json, etc. Okay? So it's going to run octopus. I can go, firstly, TFX login, and just to save a little bit of time and watching me fat finger things, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to fat finger it even with my copy, which is impressive. Auth type. All right, and grab my password manager. And I'm going to go to Git here and grab my credentials. You're all using a password manager, right? The silence. Why do I need a password manager when I've only got one password for? All right, so we've got that. It's like my PIN number. I write on the back of the card in case. CD octo first. Just make sure I'm in the right spot. Yep. Okay, so TFX build is the command line thing to do builds, build task related stuff. Tasks to update build tasks, and I can delete or upload or whatever else from the command line. So I'm going to go TFX build tasks upload, and then the particular folder, because I'm actually sending the entire folder. It will zip up that folder for me and move it up. So it takes care of the JSON and everything else and make sure it's all packaged. So if I do that and hit the button, awesome. Source not found. What folder am I in? .slash. DIR. Okay. Upload. Don't you love it when things suddenly decide to misbehave? Okay, what have they changed? Oh gosh. No, I want dash dash help. When in doubt, have a look. What's it wanting? It's wanting arguments, upload a build task, task path. Oh, you want task path now. So I updated the command line after yesterday morning when they did all the announcements. And obviously, task path is that. And I'm going to go and just say auth type basic again. All right, that's better, hopefully. And I'll grab my password again from here. Task uploaded successfully. Happy days, okay? So now if I jump back over to VS and I go into here and I edit this and I hit the right button, I hit edit here and I add a build step and I now go to deploy, I should have Octopus. And that's uploaded that. That's not a default task. It's not in the system. So I've just uploaded that, and that's how easy it is to create stuff. Okay? So nice and extensible. You've got full control over whatever happens in the system, and it's fairly straightforward. Last thing I wanted to show just while we're getting towards the hour mark is continuous integration and hooking into SonarQube. So who's been aware of what Microsoft's been doing with SonarQube? Who's heard of it, by the way? No one. Oh, a couple of people. Okay, so I'm into this. I think this is super sexy because I used to do management and I love charts. Chart porn's fun. SonarQube, cloudapp.net. You guys can jump onto this, by the way. Feel free. If you've got your machine open, just jump to rb-sonarcube.cloudapp.net. It's open for you guys to access. Scary as, I know. And what this is a way of looking at metrics across your system and charting them over time and looking at things like code coverage in your tests or the FX cop warnings and your analyzers and things like that, seeing how your numbers are going over time, looking at code duplications. You probably don't want to do that if you've got a legacy application and you've done copy and paste development for all those years. That could be really scary. And if you get onto here, so rb-sonarcube.cloudapp.net, I'm going to jump into my microcafe, and it tells me a few things. It says, my current technical debt rating is 3.1%. I have 3,700 lines of code, 3,800. I'll just zoom into these sections a little bit. I've got JavaScript and C# in here. I've got 46 directories, lots of classes. I have 0.7% of duplications. Whew, that's good, not too much copy and paste. Cyclomatic complexity, in other words, the number of decision points, all that sort of thing is all tracked in here, as well as, on the right, issues as picked up by code analyzers. So I've got 6 blockers, 7 criticals, 221 majors, minors, and info. Now, this is fairly large, as you can see. And as I look at this, I can then set up a chart that tracks these numbers over time, and here I was playing around with analyzing all the Angular source code as well, because I use Angular in this app, and it threw it up to the roof. Lots of errors there. This is SonarQube 5.2, which is cool. And the way we integrate with this is actually really easy. Really easy. The team has put out some tasks. So I'm just going to exit that for a second. And the tasks are here. SonarQube for MS Build. The first thing it does is says, I need an endpoint. The endpoint I showed before, let me just bring that back, just attach so we can see it. These are the endpoints, if you recall, and I have an endpoint for SonarQube which says I'm going to the rb-sonarcube.cloudapp.net server. If I needed permissions, I could put permissions in here or a password token or whatever else. I then say I'm going to be putting the data in this project name, and then that's pretty much it. So that's the first thing that happens before I do any steps. So I start analysis, then I run through my build, my tests, and then at the end I end analysis with another task, and that will now gather up all the data that's picked up through the analysis stages. So the MS build task at the start inserts the SonarQube analysis in the build definition, updates the projects and things like that so that it does it all for you, and then I simply take the results, send them up to the server, and away I go, which is great. And then I run that build. It's all cool. And if I look at the builds, I can see one here. Here's a build that's happened. And I can see I've got test results, 2 tests, and some coverage, and all that sort of thing. So this has been working. And then I've got a SonarQube analysis report. So you remember, each task can put its own information into the output window here, or the summary window. The SonarQube tasks are doing just that. They're saying the analysis succeeded, this is the version number, and I can jump to the analysis results, which is going to go and, strangely enough, take me over to the dashboard, which is cool. Now, where this also gets nice and where it's worth having a play with SonarQube is you can see the types of technical debt. As a team, I can start paying attention to this, but I can also set up what's called a quality gate. So in here, I have the idea of quality gates. And the quality gate, it's a little bit hard to see. We'll zoom it up. Says, my quality gate, I'm going to fail if I can't have less, if I have more than six blocker issues. So I currently have six, so I'm on the cusp. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change that number, drop that down to say four, or in fact zero, because let's be fair, I shouldn't have any blocker issues. I'll update that. And that quality gate applies to this project, the micro cafe project, per se. Now, the other thing that I've got, if I jump back to my dashboard, is if I hit the back button properly, and I go to administration, I have in here, in the general settings, a thing called the bill breaker. The bill breaker checks the quality gate, and if the quality gate has failed, it will break the bill. That's what we want to do. Because who does the analysis work on their builds and then doesn't actually break the build if they fail the analysis? They just kind of treat it as informational or it's a nice to have. We don't want to do that. So I'm going to go here, go build with Sonar. Let's queue a new build and fire that off. This is on the hosted build server because it's got Java on it. And while that's running and doing its thing, it'll take a little bit because I've got four solutions, all the Sonar analysis and everything else. So while that's running, let's throw open to questions, and then we'll have a look. So, questions? Whoa. What's the release tab? Ah, that's release management. That's one of the other extensions you can get. So if you go into the extension gallery, who went to Anthony's session on release management yesterday? Yeah, so there was already a session done yesterday for that. The recording will be online. Go and have a look.
Release as in deployment?
Release as in deployment, yeah. Release as in an alternative to Octopus, even though I just showed it. all right, what are we doing? So it's getting sources, running tasks, fetching the quality profile from SonarQube. So it's pulling down the quality information for this project so it knows what analysis steps to run. We'll do its thing. And it's going to do its stuff. We'll wait for it to happen. It's going to take a little bit. That's okay. Yeah? Tasks for independ? I don't know. I haven't seen any. Let me just quickly go and crack open a new tab while that's doing things and have a look. Easiest way to find out. There's no out-of-the-box ones that I'm aware of. So if I edit the build and add some tasks, add some steps, I should say. One thing in the UI that's a bit unfortunate at the moment is there's no way to search. So you see there's no search option up here. So I can do, you know, Octopus, and I can basically just do browser search to try and find it within there. So if I go end depend, nothing at this stage. That said, again, this is probably something you'd write a custom task for, or jump on the end depend project and see if just drop an issue in the project and say, can you create one? Because that would be cool, thank you very much. And I would love you. maybe don't add that last little bit at the end, it's kind of awkward really. If you're doing JavaScript, we've got grunt and gulp in here, all those sort of things. Docker deployments, this is more for the Linux space than the Windows containers for those who are in the container sessions. But that it's basically running the Docker command line client to do things. Decrypting files, what else? Utilities, kind of nice. So that's where those scripts are that I was talking about before. Xamarin, if you're doing Xamarin builds, anyone doing that again? So there's a few I know. So you need to get your license in for Xamarin build, right? So there's a step in here to load up your license and make sure you're all good to go. Just running through what other interesting things are in here by default. Xcode, iOS devs, anyone? No one's doing iOS apps anywhere? Okay, yeah. So you can now build that. The trick with Xcode builds, you do need to have a build agent that's running on the Mac. This is where the cross-platform story becomes really important again. Download the zip, run it locally on your Mac. You've got yourself an agent. You can then push to it, no problem at all. Or based on the announcement from Microsoft at Connect yesterday morning, you could use Mac in Cloud. So Mac in Cloud is hosted Mac machines that you can pay like $30 for a month or something like that, and use that as a build agent for your Mac stuff, Mac builds, which is kind of cool. Makes it quite doable and enjoyable, potentially. Testing, cloud-based web testing and load testing, which is cool. Xamarin Test Cloud, have you used that, by the way? Xamarin Test Cloud? Nope. Packaging, deployment, et cetera, et cetera. And I expect there'll be more and more tasks turning up over time once people want to actually spread out and use other things. All right, so let's have a look where our builds are at. And it's currently, actually I should jump back to this one. It's currently in the testing stage. So it's done the build, it's done the NuGet restore. It's going to push stuff across. I picked the hosted build. It's actually faster than the little build agent I'm using because I used a really cheap Azure VM. It's like a single core with 28 bytes of memory. Which is that guy over here. All right, other questions while we're in wrap-up? Okay, I'll just leave that running for a second. Okay, so final steps then. Some of the gaps. Where are the gaps in where things are at? Gated builds. Gated builds aren't there yet. Plans published, if you're not aware of where the plans are published for VSTS, some of the things that they're aiming to do are published on the timeline. So if you go into visualstudio.com, you go into news, you can see it was VSO updates, but service updates, VSTS updates. And at the top, they've got things they're planning to do. Gated builds are listed as update 2 for 2015 on-premise. So we should expect to see that in the next 3 months, roughly. Labeling and tagging of sources in TFS 2015. It's in the service, it's not in 2015. RTM, it's in 2015 update 1, which is due November 30. It's in the RC at the moment if you want to run the release candidate, it's in there. But November 30 is when they announced 2015 update 1 will be available for both Visual Studio and TFS. So that will be in there, so you'll have all that sorted out. Throttling, we talked about before. Client-side workspace mapping with TF version control was a bit ugly previously. A lot ugly. Now fixed. Update one again. And build chaining. That trigger to chain another build, that's not there at this point in time. Again, that will come. I don't have an ETA on that at this stage. But that's pretty much it. There's not a huge amount of gap. So in most cases, there shouldn't be anything stopping you from going forward and doing that. I talked about Sonar, which is cool. All right, so in wrap up then, basically, team build is the future. It's where all the investment is happening. XAML builds are, to all intents and purposes, done. Like Silverlight is done. So think about transitioning your existing builds. If you, again, have a heavy investment in XAML build, and you've done a lot of customization to your XAML build processes, take your time. But you will have to move eventually. Consider whether you actually need to write custom tasks. Don't just do it because you can. Think about what you need to do. At least the experience in building a custom task is much easier if you've ever had to write custom tasks for XAML builds. The dev experience is a nightmare in that space. It's much easier, but again, try to avoid it if you can because it's extra maintenance you have to do. And think about extending out from your build to better understand your technical debt. The team, you will see the integration with SonarQ being pushed ahead further and further. There's a lot of talk about that in the managing your technical debt space. So if you think about the entire operation lifecycle, the ALM stack. It's not about write the code, build it, deploy it. It's also write the code, make sure it's okay, ensure that we've got quality all the way through our cycle, at our build, at our deployment, into production, and even in production, bringing quality information back through into dev so that we're basically building the best product we can. That's what we're looking to do. So that's where those tools fit into place. And with that, we are open to Q&A. I'm just going to see if SonarQube has failed. It's still running. Oh, I didn't fail my quality gate. Awesome. Did I save it? I might not have saved it. We'll look later. Play around with it anyway. It's well worth doing. So that's our Q&A. Anything else in wrap-up? Otherwise, I hope you... Oh, yep, question?
What are the costs for SonarQube, particularly with on-premise TFS?
That's free. SonarQube does have licensed analyzers. So if you're doing C++, for example, and you want to get that, there's a fair bit of cost to it, like $7,000 or something. And if you want commercial support, I think it's about $50,000 or something like that in terms of the license. So you've kind of got this really cheap, easy access model, and then there's the whack. That's their business model. If it changes over time, time will tell, but that's currently where they're at. So be aware of that. The .NET analyzers, the JavaScript analyzers, and that SonarQube instance that I just showed you, all free, which is nice. So there's enough to get going and then move from there. There were other questions? Yep.
If the pricing is favorable for this, would you recommend moving away from, say, Team City Octopus to the release?
I would say if you've invested heavily in Team City and Octopus, keep using it. Yeah. Don't throw it just because of change. If there was enough cost differential that it was worth it, then yeah, go for it. No problem at all. Yep. Other thoughts, questions? Well, in that case, thank you for coming out early this morning. There is still time to fill in your evals and get prizes and all that sort of thing. What have we got? Two sessions left before the lock note or something? I think you've made it this far. Enjoy the last two. I'm out of here.